This is James Bennett. James, take it away.
The thing that I love the most about this conference is, for me, it's always like a reunion. I mean, the speakers are great and everything, but it's always amazing to see how throughout the years, how God has placed different people in different churches all over the nation and the relational aspect of what we do. And so my privilege is I get to do leadership training in such a relationally based culture that is the Ark. And I know that's what most of you love so much about it. And so excited to be here to talk about leadership programs in local church, and especially doing it as a team within the Ark with all the Ark churches. And so I want to just say a quick word of prayer, and then I'll get going. Lord, thank you so much for just giving us the opportunity to be a part of your kingdom. Thank you that you use imperfect people to do your perfect will. And we just give you these next few minutes. Pray that it would be strategic and that you would help us to figure out your strategy for your kingdom in regards to leadership training programs. In Jesus' name, amen. As Lane said, I was a student in 24/7 in Colorado. Before I ever came into leading it, I worked in 2 years on staff out there and then moved to Arkansas. When I moved to Arkansas, I actually moved to Arkansas to do youth. And I did youth for a while and then turned that over to someone. And then a children's pastor left and they came and asked me if I'd be a children's pastor. That's probably the same story of a lot of you. You've probably bounced around from here and there within church ministry before. So when I actually started 24/7 in Arkansas, my wife and I were actually the full-time children's pastors. And so, we had about 600 kids a weekend and a 50-person leadership team. But this whole thing of leadership training within local church wasn't dying inside of me. So I went to Rick and said, Rick, hey, man, if you gave me a chance, if I could still maintain all my responsibilities with children's ministry, but if I could just, you know, kind of nonchalantly, kind of casually train 10 people for a year, what would you think about that? And he said, are you talking about 24/7? I'm like, yeah. He's like, we don't really need that right now, James. I said, I know, but what if we could start it and it wouldn't affect anything else? So let me do it by the grace of God. And by the grace of God, we were able to do children's ministry and 24/7. And the reason why I mention that is because I know some of the hurdles that a lot of us face when we're looking at leadership training programs in their churches, where we might be in a place where we can't go out and hire somebody full-time to do this thing. Well, I believe, and it's our heart and our passion, is what if we could help you generate the things that are probably some of the major obstacles that you have, and that is the infrastructure. How do you do it? What if we could give you the nuts and bolts that it takes to run a leadership program, and then you get to just to adapt it to the DNA and the culture of your church, and then all you need, really, is you need somebody that's passionate about leadership and leadership training that could take it. So I don't need to spend a whole lot of time convincing you of why it would be important to have a leadership training program. Otherwise, you wouldn't be sitting here if you weren't interested. But there are a few stats that I think are interesting. One of the stats is 76% of all high school students, they go to college after they graduate. I thought that that was a little low, but it was still pretty encouraging. You know, 76% isn't bad. However, only 2/3 of those finish their first year of college. The average time it takes a student to graduate with a bachelor-level degree is 5.5 years at an average cost of $10,000 a year. Now, the thing that I've noticed across the board is this generation is passionate for purpose. Passionate for purpose. They want to do something significant. But I feel like as a culture as a whole, we're doing a poor job with equipping them. And I think, unfortunately, some of that, a majority of that falls on the local church. To me, there's no reason why a secular university should be pulling our potential leaders in ministry away from the local church to go in to secular education. I think the church, with the power of the Holy Spirit and the creativity and the common effort of things like the Ark, should be able to come together and provide education and training for our future pastors, that where they can stay around and continue to learn the DNA of our church. And so that would be the goal. We call it intern programs. To me, it's just semantics, but I would challenge you to think about it this way. Think about your program as a school. Think about it. Think about your people as students. Okay, and if you think about it that way, I think it's going to help you generate the mentality. It's going to be important for you to go into this. I'm not necessarily going to ask how many people are in here senior leadership in your church, but I think one of the things that's going to be really, really important, and I'm going to mention this up front just so you can be kind of thinking about it, and hopefully it'll help you kind of generate your questions, because that's really what we want to get to, is I want to challenge maybe a little bit of the mentality that you might be having even right now in regards to a program within your church. The reason why I don't necessarily like the term intern is because as soon as we think of intern, we kind of think about free slave labor. I mean, if we're really honest, I love Tim Hawkins. He's saying, you know, when you're in the church, he's a Christian comedian. He said, you know, when you're in the church, I always love hearing people come to me and say, hey, man, we just love you. You have such a servant's heart. And he says, I always get so scared when they say that because I know I'm getting ready to stack chairs. And so you're like, runs the other direction. Okay, so that being the case, how do we do this? It is going to benefit the church. There is no doubt about it. And a lot of the things, stacking chairs, doing different things, it's a part of the training. It's an intricate part because it teaches them the model that Jesus taught, and that's to serve and to give up and to become the sons and daughters of the kingdom and not servants and slaves, to have the right mentality about those things. But that is not the primary goal of these programs. It can't be. The senior leadership has to be sold out on. This is an investment into the future leaders. If the driving goal is to have a team of people that can come in and help you with the ins and outs of running things and setting things up, that's okay. But they will be interns, but they won't necessarily receive what they need to be equipped for the ministry. And so that mentality, I think it needs to be challenged just a little bit. If you can, however, look at it as an opportunity, it will cost the church. It will cost the church. Now, I believe that it won't cost as much as you think it may, but it is an investment. It is an investment, but if you can look at it like that, what it can produce for you is incredible. What the energy that it will bring. I mean, imagine having a team of people that are there. Their sole purpose, every day they wake up with a purpose to seek God, and that's the only thing they're doing. They're there to hear the voice of God. And so they're dedicating themselves to prayer, to reading the Word, to learning worldviews, to gaining some knowledge about the world around them, about ministry, about the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament survey. You know, what does all that look like? But they're there, and they're in your services. And they've been turned on to God, and they're passionate. They've drawn near to God, so He's drawn near to them. So they're filled with the Holy Spirit. They're on fire about what He's doing, and they're up front in worship. They're there. They're, the momentum, the thermostat that will have in your services is incredible. That's what you want to create. The way that you create that is you are offering a service. You are offering a service. You are saying, we are honored that you would be willing to give up a year, 2 years, 3 years of your life, and we will be good stewards of your time, and we will invest in you. And when you do that, the passion, the level of leadership that it will rise up in your entire body will be incredible, because they're going to be serving in different ministries every weekend. They're going to be in your children's ministry. They're going to be in your youth ministry. They're going to be in your high school ministry. They're going to be in all those areas. And the people around them be like, man, these guys, we want to be like this. We want to worship God like this. We want to passionately pursue God like this. I'm sure you guys can see the benefits. So, before, you know, without going really any further on that, I think you're convinced on that. The bottom line is there isn't a growing progressive church right now that isn't reaching this universe, this generation. It's just not going to happen. You won't have, if you're not reaching out to this generation in some strategic way, more than likely, you won't grow. Because this is the generation that God is using. I think Jesus modeled it. And I think really discipleship and leadership training programs can be very simple if we just look at the model that Jesus set. Most Bible philosophers believe that most of the disciples are in their younger, early 20s because only Peter and Jesus went and paid the tax to Caesar. So these guys were young guys. These are the guys that we need to be bringing in and training strategically. So how do we do it? Well, especially with 24/7, you know, there's a lot of models out there. I would encourage you to study every single one of them. There are some incredible things. We sat around yesterday for hours talking about all the good, the bad, and the ugly of what we're learning in leadership training programs. 24/7, it has been around for a long time. We're all modifying, we're all changing constantly, but we have had a lot of opportunity to kind of iron out the wrinkles of leadership training. And so there's four basic pillars that I want you to consider in regards to looking at your leadership program. And these pillars are kind of derived from the passage that talks about when Jesus was in this phase of life. It's kind of interesting. Jesus gets to 12 years old, and it talks about him, and it talks about him teaching and being in the temple, and then he goes off the radar between the ages of 12 and 30. We're like, well, that's a really big gap of how do we, you know, what do we look at to say, you know, well, Jesus, how were you living life during this time of your life? Well, this is the only verse, and it's Luke 2:52. It says, and Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and with men. Now, there's four things that are identified in that verse that give us indications of, hey, what do you do when you're 18 to 25 years old? Well, first thing, you grew in wisdom. Okay, so you are gaining a knowledge. That would be an element of the program that you want to have. You want to have something. Now, here's what I would say. If you want to be a university, you're going to have a long road ahead of you. They've been working on it for a few hundred years, and they're really good at it. But if you want to give practical application classes, stuff that when they go to Walmart, as soon as they're done with the class on lunch break, they're going to find themselves in a conversation with someone. They'll be like, man, I can apply what I just learned. I think that that's the kind of education that you want to provide. You want to provide stuff that's very, very applicable. There's a lot of different ways out there that you can get some higher education. We can give you information on that. But that element of growing in wisdom, getting knowledge, there's two forms of learning. There's a Hebrew form and the Greek form. The Greek form is what most of our culture ascribes to. It's sitting in a class, it's dissertation, note-taking, test-taking, that type of learning. The Hebrew form was what Jesus did. It was live sermon illustration every day. When he was walking with the disciples, it was teaching them based on life principles, what people were going through. The stuff that was just the relevant right now, this is how you deal with life. This is how you lead ministry. And that form of education, I think, is gaining a lot of ground right now in our culture. And whether it's in the marketplace or in the church, people are a lot more interested in who you are as a person instead of what a piece of paper says you might know. And who you know, and what your reputation is, and what your integrity is. That's why one of the most recruited groups of people, even in the marketplace, are war veterans and people that have retired out of the military, because they believe, well, they may not have a piece of paper that says they know how to do the job, but they're going to show up to work on time, and they're going to have business ethics, and they're going to look you in the face and shake your hand, and they're going to be articulate. They're going to be responsible. I would encourage you to think outside of maybe the confines of what you think of, well, knowledge, so we've got to give them these classes. Well, I think some of those are great, but look at the practical application classes. Look at the things that they can apply right now. Okay, so in wisdom and in stature. Now, one of the reputations that 24/7 used to have and is being adapted to fit ARC culture constantly is we don't want to be known as like this super hard military type program. One of the things that gave that reputation for a long time was the physical element, because it's so difficult. This is my heart for that. My heart is to be like what Paul said, that he beats his body to make it a slave. You know, I think that unless at one point or another in your life, your physical body is challenged and pressed and stretched, then some of the emotional and mental thinking that you have that may not line up with the Spirit of God will never come to the surface. Jesus set the example right at the beginning of his ministry. I mean, he's God, and he goes into the desert to fast to himself for 40 days. He did it to set an example. Be disciplined in your flesh. Be disciplined in your flesh. And so when we're working out, we work out hard, and it isn't something that you have to have in your church. It may not fit the culture of your church. It may be that it's fasting, but whatever it is, there needs to be a physical element that causes them to get to a breaking point so that the emotions and the mental side that isn't submitted to the Spirit of God comes out, making their flesh a slave to their spirit man. So that when they're in their marriage and when they're in their ministry and they hit up against things that are so difficult, they can make the decision, my flesh, my emotions, my thinking on this right now is submitted to the Spirit of God. That's the reason why we work out. And because we go to hard to reach places. And one of the reasons why they're hard to reach is because they're hard to reach. There's mountains you have to climb. We just got back from Kenya. I was out in the desert, 120 degrees. We had to walk a mile to get our water every day. There's a part of the physical conditioning that certainly is beneficial when you're in those types of conditions. But the number one thing is making sure that their flesh is a slave to their spirit man. Okay, So in stature and in favor with God and with man. The God part is the spiritual element. Of course, it's integrated into really everything that we do. There's not a part of our program that we're not thinking about how does this benefit build people for the kingdom? Because that is the goal. It's not building people for your program. It's not building people even necessarily for your ministry. It's building people for the kingdom. Trust that they will hear the voice of God on where that means or what that means and where it is. The spiritual element, have some sort of a structured environment where they're given the opportunity to hear the voice of God for themselves. We have chapels. We have classes that talk about those types of things. We have fasting retreats. Highlands, they do a 40-day fast.
40 days? Wow.
Yeah.
21.
Oh, 21. Sorry, I meant 21. Some of them do 40. 21. Sorry, man, I was just trying to multiply for you. They do a 21-day fast, and it's almost right coming into, right at the beginning of their year. They're going into this thing. And so, but creating that lifestyle of fasting, but the chapels where they're every day they're coming in and you're challenging them, okay, what are you hearing from God? Teaching them how to study the word, teaching them how to pray. It is amazing. We have PKs, people that have been raised in the church their whole lives, and they don't even know where most of the books of the Bible are. They don't know, they don't understand context of Scripture. They don't know how to break it down. And so giving them opportunities to grow in that. And then favor with God and with man. The social element, the team building element of these types of programs, I believe, is one of the strongest attributes that we have. And every program does a little bit differently as far as how they structure it. But this is the key. You know, especially within the ARC, what I've noticed is less and less pastors are sitting down and saying, can I see your resume? Where did you get your education? They're hearing about these people that they want to hire from other people. And they're hearing about it because of their ability to communicate, to articulate themselves, but most importantly, because of the relationships that they're able to establish because of their unquestionable character and integrity. And so what we have is opportunities where the students can come in. Like I said, they're done different in a lot of different programs. One of the things we do is we have what are called truth talks. Okay, now what this is we always, of course, promote the biblical model of if you have an issue, go to the person. Okay, but what if they go to the person and then they take a leader to them? Well, we sit down with a team and we say, okay, we're going to talk about the issues. And it's a mediated, safe environment for these students to learn how to deal with conflict resolution. What do I do when I just get to that place where it just doesn't seem like I'm able to work through this issue? Well, more than likely, if it's an issue that's come to that point, it's probably an issue that other people have with that too. So let's hear the perspectives and let's talk about this and let's learn how to deal with that kind of conflict. Between that, the memories that are established, that would be another thing that I would encourage you to do. You need to give these students memory makers, opportunities to go out and do things that they wouldn't commonly do together that stretches them, that is uncomfortable for them, whether it's camping trips or rappelling or missions especially. I would encourage you to have missions as a part of what you do as a leadership program, giving them that chance. When you put them in those environments, the relationships that are built, I mean, this is relationship in the crucible. I mean, these people are being pushed in and pressed in. It's like Play-Doh that's like six different colors, and by the end of it, it's one color because it's been pressed and meshed so many times that there's not even, you can't even tell that there was a bunch of different colors because now they're one team. They're working together. That's the kind of dynamic you want on your staffs. That's what you already have. We need to be training our young people to how to build relationships like that. So when they go onto a staff, even if it's outside of their church culture, even if it's at another church, they've learned what it takes to go in and build strong relationships. That if they have an issue with someone, they know how to talk to them in love and in a way that's going to be led by the Spirit. So those four pillars. Now, here's the deal. Like we said, there's lots of different ways out there to do all these things. My heart, and I know Lane's heart is, we want to equip churches to do leadership programs. I'm not interested in having a competitive nature if it costs doing the fullness of the Great Commission, and that is making disciples that are going to go and do the ministry. And so if there is any way that we can possibly help, that's what we want to do. We could all talk. I mean, all right, so I know that that's kind of an earful. I know it's a lot more vision maybe than theory, but that's what we want to give you the chance right now. You can ask as many questions as you want, as specific or as general as you want, and we want to answer those questions. Yes, sir.
I'll just be straight up. I'm very pragmatic.
Okay.
People, students come, they pay.
Yes.
The interns.
Yes.
And the church has budget set aside to contribute as well to the project.
Actually, what I would say is this. If you have that available to you, you're a blessed man. Most senior leadership, if you're going to have this thing up and going, you need to be able to operate at least for the first couple of years with your budget based on the tuitions that are coming in. If you have extra budget that's allocated to you, then that's great. The only part of our budget that's covered by the church is my salary. That is it. Everything else comes from our tuitions. That's part of the training. Our third years are learning how to manage a six-figure budget towards our events, towards the things that we do.
How do you do the housing?
There's lots of different ways that people are doing that, and a lot of it will depend on how much you feel like you can charge within the culture of your community. Where we're at, we kind of hit a lid on how much we can charge for the program, and so we can't go and rent apartments. That's one way that people have done it. They go and rent apartments to put their students in. We do home sponsors. And what that means is you're recruiting families from within your church to partner up with you in the vision to allow students to stay at their homes. It works like a student exchange program. And I'll tell you, if it works within the culture of your church, it's an incredible ministry. It winds up being, it winds up being like another ministry within a ministry. These families wind up becoming like second families to these students, and it becomes much more than just a bed and a roof over their head. I mean, they get involved with the vision, and there might be families that have been sitting around. They've got huge houses and just haven't found a place to plug in the church, and this is going to be their avenue to finally feel like they're really contributing towards the kingdom.
And one healing place doesn't even offer housing at all. It's just...
It's on your own.
Yeah, it's on your own. So everyone under the sun, from renting facilities to home sponsors, to the student has to figure it out just like they would if they were going to college.
Okay. How committed does the senior pastor and the staff have to be as far as time and energy?
Very, very. I would say that they need to be meeting with that group of students at least once a week. And I know they do that at Highlands. Pastor Chris
spends more time with our interns than he does with the staff.
And the thing is...
That's the truth. He meets with them 2 hours a week, and there is only a select group of staff members at Church of the Highlands that have access to him, even in 30-minute segments. I mean, so they get the best he has. I mean, they get 2 hours every week, so it's important. That's a little over the top, but Pastor Chris, I mean, it's his primary desire to have that. Not all senior pastors have to do that, but having some kind of access is very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rick has hung out with our students a few times, but the other thing is Rick has made it completely open for any of our students to meet one-on-one with him. They can set it up through Emily, and a lot of them have been able to have those meetings. And I know that that's kind of preliminary right now, and he gets more and more busy. It's more and more difficult, but I think access. But here's the deal. Your senior leadership at probably any of the churches that are in here, they're going to want to hang out with these guys because they know that this is, I mean, it's the bread and butter of what the church is doing, so... Yeah.
These kids are committed to, they're not working during the day, they're just solely focused on this.
Depends on the program.
Every program's different. Our programs are full-time. They can't even have a babysitting job. I mean, it's just full-time, 24-7, but most of the programs will allow for some part-time aspect of employment.
What's a day in the life? It'll
be different for each program. Our program, if there is such a thing as a normal day for us, we'll wake up in the morning, we'll work out around 6:30. We'll spend an hour and a half doing that. We'll come in for a chapel where they were praying for an hour and a half to 2 hours. Then they'll have a short class. Our classes range from personal finance to worldviews, hermeneutics, apologetics, for Old Testament, New Testament survey. Short class, lunch, come back. Usually class is a little bit in the afternoon. Then we have something going on every single night of the week. Serving in youth ministries. We have two services on Wednesday and Thursday. We're also doing local outreach Fridays. I know they do a different day, but we have every week we have a full day of local community outreach where we're working in seven different parachurch ministries, from homeless shelters to food banks, you name it. So that's kind of the, for us, it's the Tuesday through Friday schedule. Saturdays, unless we have something as a program that we're doing, fundraising, that type of thing, they'll have the morning off, and then we have services all Sunday or Saturday night. Sunday, work day, Sunday's afternoon, they're spending with their home sponsors. Sunday nights is kind of the service they come to. It's the college service. And then Mondays is their day off.
You also need someone that is full-time to coordinate and manage that.
Well, like I said, the first year I did it full-time. But I was a full-time children's pastor. So the key would be to bring in leaders. Take a second year or a third year from one of the programs that are already existing to understand how these work. They're more of your on-the-ground, full-time people, especially for your first year. My suggestion would be recruit 6 to 8 people that are in your community that you know, that know the church, that know the church culture, and get them sold on this vision. Don't despise humble beginnings. If you try to build a huge base your first year, it's going to be difficult without a full-time person. But if you want to get the ball rolling, I would say just a couple of good leaders and then somebody that's on your staff that's very, very passionate about leadership training that can spend a fair amount of time with these guys. I think if you have a couple of leaders or even one strong leader from another program, like I said, I think you could probably start with 8 to 10.
Yeah. We started one in Florida last year. I think they have 9 students.
Yes, sir.
For the classes, like you said, you guys have morning or day classes. Who supplies materials for those? Do you guys have materials for free?
That's per program. That's one of the things we talked a lot about yesterday is the different ways we're doing. A lot of people are moving to online stuff. We've spent some time this year writing some of our own curriculum just to kind of cater it to our church culture and what we want to do as a program. Who are the guys that Justin's getting reused?
The ARC has a partnership with Globe School of Ministry, which is accredited through Lee University online classes, and so that's what we're using. We're not going to try and teach what they can go get at a Bible school. We're going to teach them what they don't get at Bible school. That's our philosophy. And so we don't teach anything that can be taught better at somewhere they can get it online, which is most of your theology stuff. What they can't get at Bible school is all the stuff we need to use every day, right? So that's what we're teaching the students through. So our curriculum is 100% designed in-house by our department heads. It's our children's pastor that's teaching them children's ministry. Our youth pastor is teaching them youth ministry. It's those type of things.
Talk a little bit more about how the tuition is allocated, and do you give them any kind of payment, like gas money or?
Yeah. Well, for us, it depends on the year. Our third years, they don't pay tuition. And we help them with some food and phone bill and that type of thing. Our program, we're going to be at $4,500 this year. And that covers everything we do. We have a lot of events. 24/7 is, we've got some big events. It's a little event driven. And so that covers all the events. It also covers a 4-week trip to Mexico. The only thing that it doesn't cover their day-to-day expenses. It doesn't cover some of the gear that we ask them to get because of the nature of the types of missions we do, the outdoor stuff that we do. It doesn't cover those things, and it doesn't cover the end-of-the-year trip. But part of the training that's built into the program is learning how to raise funds. So these guys do a big Cajun dinner. They had like 30,000 people come to their thing this year. No, they didn't have that many, but they sold out 3 shows or 4 shows.
We had 2,400 people come to a dinner theater, and we raised
$60,000.
So they basically almost completely were able to pay for their whole team to go on their missions trip. So that's the end of the year missions trip, the day to day stuff, and some of the equipment is the only thing that the tuition doesn't cover.
How do they get around?
They have support. They have to have support.
They pay for their own gas.
Yes. Yep. So I would say, if you want to boil it down, if you had a program that was very similar to ours. If you want to give an accurate estimate of what the entire 10 months would cost, I would say it's probably in the neighborhood of around 6 to 8, depending on the student and depending on what they need. I mean,
their housing and their food is paid for by the home sponsors in our program. The home sponsors commend it to their groceries. So that's why it's so cheap. So really, the reason it's 8,000 is because of insurance on the car and gas in the car and whatever they want to spend it on their own meals, like when they want to go out with their friends. So it can be even done cheaper than that.
Yeah,
of course.
You have some kids commit to 2-3 years.
Well, that's a little. There's going to be a little bit of difference between the different programs on that. These guys, well, you can go ahead and tell them what you're going to do.
Are you guys 2 years, Lee?
Yeah, we're 2 right now.
Yeah, Celebration Church in Jacksonville, Stovall's Church, they're a 2-year program. We are a 10-month program, so we call it a 1-year program, and that's for any student under the sun. We believe every student before they go to college or after they go to college, before they go to work, should spend 10 months tithing to God of everything. And then if any of them are called to full-time ministry, we offer a second and third year like James does. And but it really, we've changed our whole focus to the 10 months to lighten the hearts of the parents that are so set on their kids going to college. And so we don't advertise those 3 years because they wouldn't let them to come to begin with.
In the culture that we're in, typically if the parents are too worried about college, they're only going to do 1 year anyway.
Yeah.
And the first year focus is just discipleship, servanthood. It's just them focusing on them. Ours is designed as a 2-year program with the second year being applied leadership. So they take the servant heart that they hopefully gained their first year, and then we give them the practical tools to learn then how to disciple others and lead others. And then we have an optional third year, which is essentially our staff. Then first 2 years are application, and the third year is by invitation.
One of the things that you could do, and you can agree or not agree, and I would think that Lee from, like our new website goes up hopefully this next Sunday, because we have 3 internships at Highlands. One is the summer, one is the full-time, like we're talking about here, and then one is an adult internship. And go to the website and copy and paste all day long. I mean you can have whatever we have, and we put as much as we can on the website to help you set up your program. I mean, change a word here and there, put your name on it, own it, whatever.
Schedules.
Everything's on there.
Well,
I mean, we're just open book. You'll get that at the ARC. If you're not an ARC church, you'll just find that ARC churches, we just want to give it away.
Yeah.
Take whatever's there and use it.
And this is something that I'm working on currently, and some of it probably depends on the time frame. I want to kind of provide 2 packages. I want to provide a package that this is just a basic outline for a leadership program. If you can follow these guidelines, it doesn't matter what kind of a program you want to have, this will help give you the infrastructure. The other package would be, hey, if you feel like 24/7 might be more of exactly what you want to have, then obviously, if you want a 24/7, that might take a little bit more of an investment. But what we'd like to do is to set up e-conferences. So where we have the people that want to lead these programs go online, and we set up times where we can e-conference to start talking about how do you lay this program out. Give them the ins and outs of them, and then equip them with packets of information. Give them the workable files for all of our media, for all the paperwork, the infrastructure. Send them media files and actually post them online too, so they have access to those, so they can kind of do it that way. That's in the works right now. Yes, sir.
Is your interim programs a subsidiary of your church, or is it just part of New Life Church and part of Highlands? I mean, is it another 501c3?
No, it's under their 501c3.
Yeah, it's under the church.
Same as the church.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Once you finish up with the kind of intern, I you said like kind of the third year is kind of an invite staff type position. Is everybody kind of geared towards that, or is it kind of like what's the placement? What's the follow-up?
Yeah, for us, the way we look at it is typically within the first and second year, because of our integration into the other ministries, they're kind of identifying where they feel called. Okay, they're going to have the natural gifting, talent, and ability for those different demographics. Our third year, we use 24/7. There's no other, in our church, there is no other ministry that's running more systems than 24/7. So for us to learn the inner workings of how to run, start a ministry, a third year in 24/7 would help you do that. And it doesn't matter if you feel called to children's ministry, youth ministry, whatever it is. As far as the placement, we have people that leave after their second year and they go into full-time ministry. That isn't say that doesn't happen, but usually our third years, those are the people that know absolutely that they're called to full-time ministry, but they're also going to know how to start it and to make it happen. And so this conference is one of the greatest resources that we have. You guys have heard about and hopefully have taken advantage of interviewing some of the students. Because of the relationship that we have within the ARC, we can guarantee 100% placement for any third-year student. Yeah, it looks a little different in each program.
Most of the programs do offer that, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Worship is one of those main ones that that's always trying to figure out, and so we offer that for sure. Because Pastor John Larson, who got his CD today from Pastor Chris, he's a graduate of our program, and so, I mean, he's passionate about training up 24/7 students for worship, for sure. Oh, sorry.
Jason Kipp.
Is similar enough where students can, like with their first year, can go to another church and be a part of that. They're similar enough where they can integrate. And, you know, I mean, because some parents, minorities, going into it next year. And so, you know, first year maybe, you know, around the house and she can be as home as possible. But, you know, the experience of being somewhere else away from home, not really in the mission field, but, you know, in a program, is that do y'all encourage that?
We've done it, but we would discourage a change. The only time we do changes, if it's discipline and we're trying a last ditch effort to help the student, because it's a difficult change to make. Because even though our programs are probably as close as any two programs, we've done it several times and it's difficult.
It's work, but really it's just kind of here's the deal. You're teaching them to hear the voice of God, and I think that if they wanted to make a shift, my goal would be that all the programs within the ARC, if they wanted to make a shift to a different program, hopefully they can make that well. But a lot of it depends on the leadership. You know, we've had a lot of integration between Alabama and Colorado in the last couple of years. And I'll tell you, it is some work, but it is doable, but it's hard. That's my take on it.
My recommendation is they start their first year out of town. Every student needs to break the apron strings, go to a new place, see God move in a new way, be a part of a different church culture, all those things.
Yeah.
So our recommendation to each other. So he has students from Alabama. Colorado has students from Alabama. I mean, Florida has students from Alabama. I mean, we're sending our kids to these different programs because we feel that's best. Yes.
If we were wanting to start one of these, and could somebody come and spend a week with the leadership who is leading these interns just to kind of get a feel for what a week would be like?
Come to their church or come to our church?
Yeah, I come to yours and, like, say if I wanted to start one of these.
Absolutely.
Would you come and sit down with you guys and just kind of watch you for a week and just kind of get a feel for what
you're Absolutely. Doing? Yeah, we've had people come in and
with
do that.
With a little bit of restriction on that.
Right.
I'm not gonna take a student that should be in my program and teach him how to run a program.
Right.
If somebody is a youth pastor of 3 or 4 years, somebody, you know, I mean, of significant leadership capacity, I don't have time. My director is over here, Hayes. We're busy. We got a lot going on, and so we don't have time for somebody to spend a week with us. So I say that with conditions. And each program could be a little bit different. I can't speak for Lee. I can't speak for James. But we're not going to just allow anybody to come in and spend a week with us.
One of the things we're working on is for as a possible model is people that want to start like a 24/7, creating a couple of times during the year where the people that are going to come in that want to start those programs, that even are the pastors, they get to come in and experience the program. We have what are called snapshots, which are for students that are interested in doing 24/7. We just give them a mini picture of what 24/7 does. We want to create sort of the same thing for pastors that are interested in starting the program. Well, I don't know how small town is. Conway is about 56,000, but I'd say 15,000 of those are college students. I think so. The difficult thing about having it in a town that's primarily a college town is it may be difficult to find people from there that want to. But I think there can be some success. What's your take on it?
No, well, you guys are in the smallest town.
Yeah.
56,000, I think, is the smallest of any of our current intern programs. And so that's, unless a household of faith, I don't know how big it, I'm not sure how big their town. Go ahead.
I might have missed it at the beginning, but where are the churches located that you guys serve?
East Conway, Arkansas, New Life Church, Rick Bizet. I'm Church of the Highlands in Birmingham, Alabama, under Chris Hodges. Lee Vartanian's right over here. He's under Stovall Weems. He leads their internship. And then Hayes Kirby is over there. Everybody can see Hayes. He directs. I oversee it. I started it and oversee it. He directs the day in, day out. And so those guys are here to answer your questions even after this time. But I would prefer that you ask them now, because even if you think it's not a good question, most people in here would probably appreciate your question and would learn from it.
I touched on it a little bit.
He's the master. He's a
my suggestion with that is, like I said, to find some students that are already in your community that don't necessarily have a strong leaning towards going straight to college or whatever. Find some star juniors and seniors that you can start working on and bring those people in. If you get one or two students from somewhere else, that's okay. But understand, whatever you start with, you're going to build your leadership on. So it's best to have people that already understand the DNA of what you're doing in your community. And I would just go and grab them, and then you've got to give them an experience. If it does feel like a traditional intern program, where they're just working and serving around the church all the time, that won't help the momentum of your program. But if you can do those things as a part of their training, but take them on some camping trips, get them on a missions experience, you know, have budget your tuitions well. Don't try to start at 4,500. Start at 2,500 or start at 3,000 or even lower. But then just use that money really, really well. That first year, giving them the experience of this thing. It's a huge, huge factor.
So starting with people that are already in the church?
I think so. When you're first getting started.
If they have a great experience, then they'll be your best recruiters.
If there's not much of that demographic right now in our church, do you have any
other? If you don't have, well, then some of it would be identifying maybe some of the students that are around that are a second year or a third year that are going to be moving on and have them come in. And they're networked relationally already, too. So you would want them to come and see the vision of what's happening in your church. And then they're going to go and communicate to other people, too, and help bring some of that demographic in. Usually, kind of how it has always worked is usually the first couple of years, it's really, really heavy local students. And then the longer it goes, you always have that percentage of local students, but it is majority students from other places. And that, of course, would be the goal, because you want the bring in, build up, send out. You want to send those students back out into the ministry, back to their local churches. The other thing is, though, that you're going to get some you're going to keep around. They'll wind up being your future staff. Well, that's, I mean, Church of the Highlands have like 12 people on their staff that came out of 24/7. So
you mentioned that you are able to offer them, you know, the ARC as, you know, a resource for being placed afterwards. Our particular church weren't planted through ARC members now, but are there a set of guidelines for setting up your internship program? Can we utilize that resource for our interns, or
no,
do we have to order something?
We are not, even though there's three 24/7s, we are not going to be a denomination. We have no control. Anybody can start any church anywhere. Anybody can start any internship anywhere. We don't have any governing structures or requirements.
I have two churches like that are talking to me right now that aren't in the ARC that want to start programs. The ARC is just an incredible resource. We're already connected, and so
can we use the same, like you were able to open up this whole, I know it's not a denomination, but this whole resource of this community of churches for these people to put their resumes online?
Yeah, if they're not an ARC church, they can't use the ARC website. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, as far as the interview process and all that?
I guess. And like we're not planted by ARC, but we're members.
No,
if you're a member of the ARC, then yeah.
Yeah. But we have a master's commission here. We have 132 interns from ARC churches at this event. We had a master's commission program from a non-ARC church come to this event. They got to do everything with all the interns. They have the shirt, everything's paid, but they had to pay full price, and they can't post resumes. So our churches do have the priority and really the only access to ARC benefits, if you will.
For obvious reasons, we know that the DNA of the ARC churches are going to be very similar. And so, you know, we can promote that.
That's huge. I know you mentioned this earlier, James, but is it possible to give a copy, maybe not here, but maybe give digital copies of your material you use for training, your schedules, and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Is it possible to connect somehow?
Absolutely.
I mean, do you have like cards we could get on the way out, send emails or websites?
Absolutely. Yeah, websites. You guys are switching yours over, aren't you?
Well, you can still get to it that same way. 247worldwide.org gets to our three programs, but you can go to celebrationchurch.com, I believe, celebrationchurch.com, or .org.
Or CO College.
Or CO.
CL
College. I mean, you can go to any of the ARC churches that have intern programs and get their go to their website, get our emails and all that stuff. 247worldwide.org takes you to a landing page that has Florida, Alabama, and Arkansas on it.
Yeah, I think we're all pretty much in here because we're interested in seeing a program being started at our churches. And as a person who's been through an internship program, the most important part of it is the director and the leadership of it.
Yeah.
And so with the other directors and leaders in here, I'll put this question to you guys. I don't think it's fair to ask the question, what is the ideal candidate? Because I know that our Bible doesn't teach us that God calls the most ideal people.
Yeah.
But I would ask you this question. As you look at yourselves and the other leaders and directors that are your associates and you help them start and get off the ground in their programs, what are the qualities that are defined in the role of directing and pioneering the program?
I'll answer that because I can brag on James a little bit. If you guys are familiar with DISC profile, pretty much everybody's familiar with that. Two of the key ingredients in DISC profile that you would want in a director is I and D. They don't have to have both, but those are both vitally important. Now, this is a DI person right here. I mean, he will get it done, he will work hard and push, but at the same time, he loves sitting face-to-face with students, loves praying with them, listening to them, hearing them out. So you have to have that high relational factor, but there has to be the D side to really push and get things done, because there are a lot of hours in 10 months, and I think most people underestimate intern programs in the fact that we're just going to have them come work at the church for the week and then we'll give them a day off and all that. Well, all of a sudden you have 6 or 8 or 10 people added to your staff, and there is nothing for them to do, and they have idle time, and we know what idle time produces, and we end up wasting their 10 months. They create work for you, and so you need a director that can really, really drive them, keep them busy, keep them focused, and make those things happen. It's not to say that if they don't have D or I that they can't be a great leader. Like you said, God can do anything, but me knowing these 9 or 8 directors from these 8 ARC churches, I know that all of these directors have some of that in them that make them successful in a great, great way. That was a good question.
I think, not to get hyper-spiritual, but I think one of the things I've learned the most in the last couple of years, and something I'm always growing in, is you've really got to have people that are really interested in building people for a lifetime. Not just for your program, not just for your church. You've got to look and see the kingdom in a person's life, and that one of the strongest attributes that's attached to that is true grace. Not the kind of grace that just lets them get away with anything, but the kind of grace that there is consequence, but there, as long as they are teachable and willing, that it doesn't matter if they get dismissed, they're still going to be calling you once or twice a week because they know that you love them, that you will fight for them, and that you believe in their overall purpose. You have to have that.
That's good.
Anything else? Yep.
Have you seen it done with several different
The main visionary could be another staff member.
Okay.
Like, when I started our program, I was the youth pastor, associate pastor, tape duplicator guy. I mean, church plant. I mean, you know, I mean,
yeah.
I wasn't even paid. When I started Church of the Highlands, I wasn't even paid by Church of the Highlands. I raised my own, and I had all kinds of tasks. So I recruited John Larson, Kellen Coldiron, two interns that had already done 2 years at another program. They came in, did their third year with me, and they were the leaders. And so I just oversaw them. And so as long as there's one key leader somewhere in the organization that is focused on making sure this thing works, you can use a team underneath them. And some of our graduates are the best students to come in and do that. But I would tell all of you, if you want to hire somebody, if you want the best of the best, they're third-year graduates, and they deserve to get paid, okay? They've paid a tuition for 3 years. They have their degree, if you will, and they do not need to go somewhere where they have to do that all over again. And so just understand that, because most people approach us wanting one of our third years to go do another free year or pay at their church. And that if you want the best ones, you're not going to find that.
I'd say just from a personal I feel really, really blessed because Rick is a huge supporter of the program, what we do and all that. But he gives me complete freedom to run it the way I feel like it needs to be run. If it gets off track, he's going to know, first of all, or one of the reasons why is his son's a student. But so there's some accountability that happens there. But giving them the freedom, really giving them the freedom to develop this thing and run with it, I think that's a major element. Anybody else?
Take two more questions and we'll be
yeah.
done.
What do you consider to be your most three valuable resources that you use to recruit future students?
This is probably going to vary between program to program. This is my personal take on it. This isn't meant to sound boastful. We're in our third year. We had 50 students this year. Those students, not one of them, there's one exception, and that's this guy right here. He's one of my third years, Nathaniel Watts. He learned about 24/7 through a video. Almost without exception, I would venture to say easily 96% of our students learned about 24/7 through a student.
Previous student. Have a great experience.
It's relationship. There might be, I'm not a smart marketing guy, and I probably need to be smarter at it or get somebody that is smart at it, but I'll tell you this, recruits are your best recruiters. That's how the early church grew, and it stays the same when
it
comes to these types of programs.
It's so non-traditional, doing marketing and going to conferences and setting up tables. We've done all that. It doesn't work because it's so out of the box. Parents aren't going to go for it. So the student has to recruit a student. I mean, that's really
and if they show up, seen. Sometimes through that they show up and they didn't know what they're getting themselves into, and they don't last.
Yeah, they quit. Last question.
Do you allow the high school students into this program, or is this like a graduate type, you know, like after high school type thing?
Different age limits for different programs. They have part-time programs for married people, all that. We specifically are the 18 to 24 range.
Yeah.
We have some exceptions. I've had
a
couple of older.
A 17-year-old that graduated high school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've had a 30-year-old too that was kind of my personal intern. So.
Awesome. We're officially dismissed. Lee, stand up. Hey, stand up. Just so that if you want to talk to any of us, we're here.
Also, if you want to get a perspective of a student,
there's
I've got
students in the
first, second, and third-year students right here. You can ask them questions too. Third-year students are right here.
Third-year guy.
Hey, man.
How you doing? Yeah, I'll just keep you up to date.